And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Johnny Donovan, here we go. It is another Friday together here at 77 WABC. John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, and a wet morning.
Wet and teary morning because of the Mets, and now the Yankees and Mets are both in the same boat. They're going home.
Well, you know, I was at the game, or the end of the game. I went to the Al Smith dinner and got there in about the sixth inning. And it was sad, but I think both teams had amazing years. They seasons, they kept us entertained with lots of smiles on our faces. Every day you get up and you hear the Mets and the Yankees both win, you know, and that's again and again and again. And it's disappointing they didn't go to the World Series, but... you know, wait until next year.
Wait until next year, indeed. A record-breaking year, if I'm not mistaken, for fans going to the games. So New York is into baseball.
You know, when you have good baseball, people go.
Word this morning from the World Trade Center that some remains have been found. For the families, especially disturbing, but I know you're concerned about this.
Yeah, I've asked Deputy Mayor Ed Schuyler to convene an emergency meeting this morning, which has probably started already, to review what happened. And... you know, we have the police department and the fire department and Office of Emergency Management and the medical examiner and our Department of Design and Construction, the MTA and Battery Park City Authority and the Port Authority and the Buildings Department and the Lower Manhattan Construction Group. Put them all together in a room and see just what else we should go look at and why this wasn't discovered 5 years earlier. I just have absolutely no idea why. But we want to go and look at all of our... protocols and develop an ability to search and make sure that we check everything underground.
Yeah, a number of weeks ago, I believe that there were some small, what they thought were remains, found on the top of one of the adjacent buildings. You're talking about a huge amount of area.
That's the thing. I mean, this was an enormous disaster. It's an enormous area. And I think those that... did the recovery effort, you know, they did the best they could. And you can't be perfect, unfortunately, when something's this big, but their hearts were in it, and they did a very good job.
Do you think after this special meeting, emergency meeting with all the players that you just mentioned, that there will be a re-scouring, if you will?
Yeah, we'll go out and look at other manholes and other things, you know, whether or not... 2 years from now or during construction somebody finds something else, you just don't know. Ed Schuyler will make sure all of these agencies are communicating and talking, and if anybody's got any ideas, maybe the other will say, hey, we never thought of that. Well, we'll do our part too. So it's the right thing to do.
All right.
But the sad thing is that there are families who, you know, remains. But having said that, nothing can bring back the people that were lost. That's the great tragedy. It took place on 9/11.
All right. The World Trade Center is still at the focus of a lot of things. You're the guy in charge of the memorial. I read this morning that the CEO from Cantor Fitzgerald says, I'll give you $25 million for it, but you've got to list the names as I think they should be listed. Your reaction?
Well, I haven't talked to Howard Lutnick, and his company lost 600-odd people. And the emotions certainly run high. Nobody's going to – I assume that is not – I read the article, too. I assume that it was just incorrect. Nobody's going to buy a memorial. Nobody's going to dictate with cash what's the right thing to do. We went through a public process. Everybody had a chance to provide input. There was – out of that public process came a design. And that's fundamentally what we'll do. You have to adjust some minor things because as you go through engineering requirements or laws change or you discover new things. But Howard Lutnick I've known for a long time, and I think it's very appropriate that his company make a donation. I would certainly have planned to ask him for a donation. He's a generous guy, and I assume he will. But you just don't take donations tied to conditions, nor does anybody who knows anything about philanthropy ask for that. I mean, that just would not be something that would be appropriate, period.
All right. One more World Trade Center-oriented question, and that has to do with the seeming controversy over benefits for families of workers that work there and illnesses. And
well, there's like, a to-do.
Something between you and the governor or the state? Or
the state passed some legislation, which the governor signed, which we opposed. And we opposed it conceptually, but we also said it was terribly drafted and would not do what was the legislation was designed to do. And it was built around a detective who had died from presumably from results the causes of, on 9/11, died later, and it was his pension fund. And we said then this wouldn't cover it, and everybody said, oh, don't worry about it, this is what the law says, and they go ahead and they sign it. Well, you know, yesterday somebody said, oh, we should just do the spirit of the law. We are a country of laws, and you just can't do the spirit. You may want to. You may think it's the right, and it may be the right thing to do. But we have to do whatever laws the legislature passes. That is what is going to be enforced. And if there's a dispute as to what the law says, that's what we have courts for. And
or the legislature could rewrite the law.
Yeah, they can do that. But if you question what does the law say, it's the courts that decide that. The legislature writes the laws, the executive branch enforces them, and the courts decide what it really says.
So that's the way it is, and until yeah. it's changed by either activity.
You just can't legally break the law by going and just saying, you can't just give away the public's money and say, oh, let's be a good guy and send a check. Doesn't work that way.
All right, stick around. Let me take a break. We'll come right back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC. All right, we've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg with us here on the John Gambling Show at 77 WABC, as we do each and every Friday. In New York, it's never there's never a shortage for stories you got to wonder about and shake your head. Brian McLaughlin, head of the Central Labor Council, assemblyman, $2.2 million, the feds claim he was absconded with.
Well, there's a presumption of innocence. I think you got to be careful here. He's not been convicted of anything. These are charges. If they are true, it is very sad, and it's not good for the city. He was an assemblyman, not good for organized labor. He was a major figure in organized labor, particularly in municipal side, and the commercial side. Not good for New York if he sent money to other elected officials, as some of the stories say. But you got to wait and see what actually happened. And in our system, we give you the benefit of the doubt until then. It's very sad.
It is very sad. Also, what is sad is that over the course of the past 2.5 years, I think it is, there are approximately, I think, 13 people in the legislature that have been accused and or convicted of taking monies from the public coffers. Not that this is anything new. It's
well, the newspaper said today there have been 9, I think, out of 90 that we send up there. And then the article very cutely said if that percentage was applied to the general public, you know, we'd have 10% of 8 million people.
But you have to admit there is a difference between government and
I have always...
I presume a difference.
I have always believed that the court should penalize you much more severely if you are an elected official because you're stealing from everybody. Now, there's unfortunately too many times we say if they're stealing from everybody, they're stealing from nobody. Nobody cares. But there does seem to be... all through the country, not just in New York.
Yeah, from on the federal level,
right,
as well as
it is outrageous, the misuse of the public trust. And, you know, in the end, you can blame us, too. We should be asking questions of our elected officials. And not accepting it. We should stand it, lean out the window and say, I'm not going to take it anymore. And maybe the voters are doing that. I don't know. But it's not a partisan thing. It's not a demographic thing. Unfortunately, it seems to be prevalent throughout at all levels of government. Too many people who are dishonest. Now, having said that, John, you also have to remember that this is a small percentage of the people, and most are honest. And so it's very easy to criticize everybody because of a handful of bad apples, but... most elected officials, I think, are honest.
There was a recent poll taken, and people that were asked whether or not this was extremely or very important to you, and then listed a number of things. Government corruption was right at the top, 85%. Of the people responding found that
Some of these people, when they cop a plea, they get reelected.
Of course they do, and of course that comes back to your point of us blaming ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, if 85% said it was important, it wasn't important enough to change their vote.
Exactly, I don't understand that as well.
It is because I think the power of incumbency is so strong. That's why I'm in favor of term limits. Those that say term limits take away your freedom to choose are right. Those that say term limits get rid of some good people are right. But the most important thing that it does is the other side. It makes this a much more competitive system. Not perfect, but better. And you throw the bums out along with the good guys.
You also take the professional aspect out of government.
To some extent. I mean, I think we should have nonpartisan elections. As you know, I've been a big proponent of it in this city, because when you have one party dominating, whether it's the Democrats as they do here or the Republicans as they do elsewhere, the real choice is made by a small group of the very committed in the primary. And the general public is disenfranchised. They have no practical ability to vote. And then in New York, some people said, oh, that's not true. Look at Giuliani running as a Republican and winning twice. Bloomberg running as a Republican and winning twice. Those were aberrations. Fundamentally, if you don't come through the Democratic machine and are blessed by the machine, put up by the machine, supported by the machine, you have no chance to get through the primary. And if you get through the primary, it's an automatic for all practical purposes, with the exceptions of these two things. And you can explain special situations for both Rudy and myself.
And because of the machine, the chance of this changing is small.
I tried to get the city charter changed, which you can do by referendum, and I didn't get the support that I needed from a couple of the newspapers, and I think that's why it was not passed. At the state level, there is no provision for a public referendum, which means it will never get done. You're exactly right. And the federal level, you'd have to change the Constitution, and forget about that. It's not going to happen.
So we're sort of stuck with what we have.
Well, we are, unless we say we're not going to take it anymore, and maybe somebody else will take on the mantra of nonpartisan elections. Maybe the press will do a better job of investigating. When you read about these elected officials that abuse the public trust and break the law, a lot of this stuff, if you really had been a good investigative reporter, you might have come up with yourself. You didn't need, and you don't see that kind of journalism as much as I think you should. We're not talking about somebody that minor abuse. We're talking about real hardcore criminals. Those are the ones. And unfortunately, you cheapen the whole thing when you try to go out and worry about the little stuff that doesn't matter.
How do you view what's going on now with the elections right around the corner here on the federal level with the October surprises, all of these leaks being exposed, whether it's Foley or Reid and the land deal? I mean, all of this stuff is being held in pocket. It's been known for months, sometimes years, and just thrown out at the last minute.
Well, that's strategy, but the fact of the matter is, if people did something wrong, they're the ones that are wrong, not the person outing them. I mean, it's like blaming the Hewlett-Packard board for how they went about finding out who was leaking. The director, I've always thought, the director that was leaking all that information in the press had a responsibility to work for the company and not try to undermine it and its management. And, I think The Economist wrote a great editorial about that, that he was really the culpable one here. But we picked our enemies strangely.
All right. Elliot Spitzer says that if he's governor of the state of New York, he wants the New York City to pay for some of this court-ordered school funding.
And I agree. There's one difference. We've been doing it. We have not sat back here and waited for the courts to rule. We have gone in this city and in the last 5 years raised the amount of money that the taxpayers of this city put into education by $3.3 billion. That's something like a 56% increase. We have been doing exactly what Elliot wants to do, and I support him in this. We've got our share. Now it's the state's money. The state's got to come
up
with a share.
That's not quite the way it was phrased, I don't think.
It may very well be, but, you know, I said also the state wants to take its money and help education. Great. They want to help all counties. Great. But if they're going to give out money, the first thing they should say to each county is, how much have you put in? If the taxpayers of that county step to the plate, then the government, the state government should say, great, and here's something else to help you. And if they haven't, I don't think that the state should be doing that. And in New York City, I don't know about other counties. That's, each county should stand on its own. But our five counties that make up New York City, $3.3 billion more in 5 years. During that time, the state increased its budget by for education in New York City by $1.5 billion. So we've been doing 2-to-1 already. And that's the monies that Elliot's talked about. It's the same thing, John, as with Homeland Security. We are, New York City is different than other cities. The federal, and that's why we have a problem with the federal government. They don't pay for things that you're already doing. They only pay for things that you haven't done. I don't know how to look the citizens of this city in the eye and say, I'm going to leave us all unprotected until we get money. No. I've said, we're going to go, and we are going to spend the money and make sure this city is as safe as we can make it, and then try to get it from them afterwards. Same thing with education. I came in, I said it was my number one priority. The teachers are getting have gotten in the last 5 years a 33% raise, more than anybody else. We've put our money where our mouth is. I had to go to face the voters and say, we're going to raise taxes to pay for this. Nobody likes that. They boo you when you're in a parade. But we got together, the city and the people in it, and they value education. They know the value, and they've done it. And now it's the state's turn. And so I agree with Elliot, but I just wanted to point out to him, we've done ours already. Now let's make sure
he's looking at a tax increase to pay for that, if indeed it is court-ordered.
I don't know anything about the state. I'm not an expert on state finances or state taxes or how they allocate their money, and I don't criticize them. And I'd like them to leave us alone. We'll worry about ourselves. They should worry, do their job. Now, where they get the money beats me.
Okay, very good.
I'm not running for governor.
We'll be right back. We're going to take a break on the half hour. More with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. All right, you've got John Gambling here at 77 WABC. Also, Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Moynihan Station, it keeps coming back up. It seems to go down now. Shelley Silver didn't attend the meeting, said, it's not going to happen. Seems like a shame that New York is not going to have that opportunity to build up that facility.
Well, there's two things going on here. One, I think, is that it is a shame. I tried to convince everybody that if you did Plan A, which was the beginning, you'd have a greater likelihood of doing Plan B, which has more components and more players. For example, you got to negotiate with Amtrak, which is a difficult. This is a federal agency that loses a lot of money, and it'd be hard to put everybody together. You know, I hope it isn't dead. We'll keep working at it. You know, I'm one of those people, or as is Dan Doctoroff, our deputy mayor for economic development. When you get knocked down, you just get up and keep fighting. And or you know, somebody slams the door in your face, you go ring the next doorbell and pretend the first thing didn't happen, and always keep trying. And you got to believe. But having said that, this was, I thought, a mistake. We should have gone and done this and got it going. The financing was there. Governor Pataki worked very hard on this, as did everybody else.
I didn't understand the reason that Shelley thought it was a bad idea.
I don't know why this was turned down. A second issue is, why is there a structure at the state level where three individuals basically have a veto over everything, this PSA, whatever the board is that approves it. And I'm not sure why that's constitutional. Maybe somebody wants to look at that. I don't happen to think that it's good democracy to give the governor, the speaker of the assembly, and the majority leader in the Senate, no matter who they are and whether they agree with me or not. That's not representative democracy. That's not letting everybody have a say, because, in fact, it isn't everybody.
It would seem to make sense that if you wanted to keep that body, which I agree with you is a question in and of itself, but that maybe that two out of the three votes are what carries the
Well, that would be, I suppose that would be better, because it doesn't let any one person hold you up. But it's I come back. You can argue the governor is elected by the whole state, but then the majority leader and the speaker are representing really only their own districts, and that's not what we should have. That I've never particularly thought was a good idea. But that is, in this case, hopefully we can convince everybody to come back to the table and get this going, because it'd be a great project for New York City for the region.
There were rumors that there were corporations involved in possibly squashing this deal. Have you heard anything about that?
I mean, you know, there's always speculation on everything, of everybody's motives. I talked to Joe Bruno, Shelley Silver, and George Pataki, and urged all of them to vote for this, and you know, that I thought it was very much in the city's interest. Some people said, well, it'll only help people from New Jersey, Plan A, because it really is only New Jersey Transit. You know, even if, number one, that's not true, and number two, even if it was, we do want to make the city easy to get into and get out of. We like New Jersey. We like people coming in and working here. We like people coming in and going to our stores and restaurants and theaters and all that sort of thing. By that argument, you said, well, it doesn't help New Yorkers, it only helps outsiders, we wouldn't have airports or bridges or tunnels or any of that stuff. So that's not.
And to that point, I read, too, that the federal government has come up with some bucks to get the East Side LIR.
East Side access, absolutely. I mean, the biggest announcement yesterday was this deal that city has done, and Doctoroff, once again, is the genius behind it, with the Port Authority, where the Port Authority has sold the city, or agreed to sell the city, the land in Queens West, where we were going to build an Olympic Village if we had been honored with the Olympics, and we're going to build 5,000 units of middle-class housing. This is some of the best property in the city, phenomenal views, right on the water, and 5,000 units of new supply. Some people wanted the city to put its money into subsidizing some existing housing, and that would have been much more expensive, but it also wouldn't have created new housing. This is a good use of the city's money.
Will the railroad run underneath there?
This is one subway stop from Manhattan with beautiful views. If you take a drive up the FDR and look over across the river at Queens West and Long Island City, that whole area, you'd be shocked at the number of new buildings going up and cranes. And this is one of those things that once you get the momentum going, the more people are there, the more desirable it is, and the more people will go there. The more building there will be, the more stores and restaurants and office space. So it's really, this is a very good deal for the city. And as Dan pointed out yesterday, with the exception of the stadium, which is still, I've always thought was a horrendous loss for the city, and we really are missing it because we don't have venues for things we want to stage here. But with the exception of that, almost every single project that was part of the Olympic bid, we've gotten going. This was one of the last big ones, this one big piece of land. And the Port Authority really deserves a lot of credit for being willing to do this. And it's a fair price for them because they have a responsibility, and a good price for the city. And it's exactly what this land should be used for.
Speaking of good news, I understand that some new numbers out on unemployment here in New York
down
City.
To a record, 4.5%.
That's virtually everybody.
You know, somebody wrote an op-ed piece the other day saying that taxes were driving businesses and people out of the city. I don't know where they get those numbers, because commercial vacancy rate continues to come down, as does crime, and the schools get better, and more jobs are created here, more corporations are moving here. You know, there's this, right after 9/11, everybody thought every company would leave, every citizen would leave, everybody would move at least half their employees out of the city, and exactly the reverse has happened. And you go and you look, the vacancy rate across the river to our west has gone from 13% to 20%, and downtown it's gone from 20% to 13%. And yeah, downtown, the only buildings that are available downtown are old buildings that offices don't want to move into, and those will be converted to residential. But you even take a look at 7 World Trade Center. I think Silverstein has a million out of 1,600,000 square feet already rented. Yeah, it's a good building. It'll finish up renting, and we will build the other buildings in the World Trade Center site. It'll take a while to fill them up, and you want to make sure that it doesn't do what the old Twin Towers did of destroying the opportunity to build other things around it. So you want to phase it in, and you want it to be the right scale, and you don't want too much. But the future of downtown is great.
Last week when we talked, we were talking about airspace over the East River. You said leave it to the professionals. FAA has come back and said, at least temporarily, we're going to shut down the East River for some.
Yeah, although I will say I don't ever remember seeing a private plane go up the East River. There are seaplanes which are used for commuting. There are helicopters which are used for commuting, police, traffic, weather, those kinds of things. Private planes tend to fly up and down the Hudson River. Which is much wider. But, you know, I looked going up the East River last week, and there's a reason why private planes don't go up there, because it's very tight. You have stacks from the power plants on one side and Manhattan buildings on the
other. And the bridges underneath.
And the bridges. The bridge is not the problem. It's just you can't turn. And apparently, tragically, for reasons I don't understand, these guys, with deteriorating weather conditions where the ceiling was coming down so they couldn't go in the clouds and they were facing going into LaGuardia's airspace, which they didn't have permission to do so. I think they just panicked, tried to make a turn, made it too fast, I assume, and stalled the plane into a building. That, I don't know if that's exactly what happened. You'll know in a couple of years, or maybe you won't, but the NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, does a very thorough job, and it'll take a year and a half.
That corridor is still open to the seaplanes and the helicopters?
Yes. Okay. Sure, because it's very...
It's a business.
It's
vital.
People need to commute, yeah.
Right. All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Let me take a break. 1-800-848-WABC is our telephone number. Your questions for the Mayor will be next. We continue here at 77 WABC. Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We've got the phones on fire here, Mr. Mayor. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Miles in Brooklyn.
Miles, you got the mayor. What's the question?
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I'm a small businessman in Brooklyn, and I've gotten tickets from sanitation for having like posters and such on light posts and on public walls. So I just want to know if the mayor's going to have sanitation department give tickets to the politicians for doing the same thing for the election.
We do, and if they're putting a sign on a piece of private property, they need the owner's permission, and then if you don't want it, don't let them do it. If the signs are going on lampposts and things like that, public property, the sanitation department issues you a ticket, and there's a fine involved. And I can speak from personal experience in both of my election campaigns.
Did the sanitation department send you a little love note?
Very big love note in both cases, and I paid every penny of it. You break the law, you got to pay. Well, the sad thing is an awful lot of people do it and they never pay their tickets. And if they don't have any money, how do you get them? You know, if a guy doesn't have any money, what are you going to do? Get blood out of a stone?
No, of course not. But,
I mean, you go do a parade up Fifth Avenue and every lamppost is covered with signs. Vote for in this case, this year, you have a governor's race and a controller's race and a attorney general's race. And then there's members of the...
You get fined once or do you get fined for
every single week or every day? It's each. I don't know how they do it. But, I mean, mine was very substantial. My campaign put up a lot of signs. I remember questioning it. And we put them up because the other guy did. The difference is I paid the fines. Now, you could argue that I shouldn't have done it.
Well, no, you could argue that it's advertising and therefore the city is selling the advertising space.
That's another way to look at it. But it doesn't collect from everybody and it doesn't decide who's ads to take.
Okay. Very good. Thanks, Miles. 1-800-848-WABC. Number two.
Bill in Bergen County.
Okay, Bill, you've got the mayor. What's the question?
Yeah, my question, Mr. Mayor, is, you know, having been an elected official, I found that there isn't a single position in the United States, elected position, that pays a fair salary. I understand that 10% of, you know, 10% what you're saying of elected officials are crooks or take money that doesn't belong to them. If we paid a decent salary, we might get decent people in there who could do it without having to cheat.
Well, Bill, there's a couple issues here. One, how much you pay is a legitimate question. I don't know what an appropriate level is. I'm in a little bit of a difficult position in even talking about it since I don't take, I think I take a dollar a year. I'm just lucky enough to have been done very well in the private sector. But I don't know there's any evidence that if you paid more, the public would have a greater choice in terms of who they can select from. And when somebody says elected officials deserve raises, My answer is, well, if there are a lot of people running, then they don't need the raise.
Supply
you're getting them
demand.
Supply and demand. That's been sometimes maybe being a bit cute. There clearly are people who have families who cannot afford to go into public service, whether it's elected or not, because you don't have to be elected to go into public service. You can do a lot of things, and they just can't afford it. And that's unfortunate, but reality. A very separate issue is how do you raise the money to go and get elected, because it takes money to advertise and to build a staff and get out the vote and do all of those kinds of things. And I don't know that that has anything to do with an elected official's net worth, although I did, once again, I paid for my own campaign. I think last time, these numbers I might be quite right, but there were 22 congressmen who were millionaires running and only two got elected. Of outsiders, the real advantage goes to incumbents. It doesn't go to rich people. If you wanted to trade wealth for incumbency in terms of getting elected, that's a very good trade.
I think I read another statistic this week too that to beat an incumbent, you need to spend well over $1 million.
It depends on the race, but also right. Incumbents find it much easier to raise money because everybody says they're likely to win, therefore I'm going to buy some influence. And, you know, most people, when they give money, at least the larger donors, probably do think they're getting influence. It's not an accident that when you go and look at who gives money to a campaign, it's people who are doing business that comes before that legislative body, and it's called pay to play. And I've always thought it was an outrage. And in fact, in New York City, the voters in a charter amendment voted to instruct the commission, the campaign finance committee, to draft regulations to stop pay for play, and they have in fact refused to do it. And I've talked to the chairman, Fritz Schwartz, and he has assured me that he is about to do this unless the city council passes laws to do it that are strong and actually would stop the practice. So far, nobody's passed laws, nobody's passed regulations, and I've always thought it was...
How can they ignore something that the voters have voted on?
By not doing anything.
Well, why are we?
Do you have another question?
Why are we the people of New York allowing this? Why are we?
I don't know. I'm trying to get you riled up against them, and you know you can go after them. You've got the bully pulpit of an hour and 45 minutes every day, 5 days a week, right?
All right, we'll put that one on the agenda.
This is and it is a good one, but there is no question there is a high correlation between people who give money and business that comes before, and it's the kind of conflict that we should just never allow. And there's all these conflicts of people doing things that you just, it is inappropriate.
All right. Bill, thanks for the telephone call. Next one.
Why don't we go to Harold?
Harold, number one on my phone bank. Harold, you've got the mayor. Go for it.
Hi, Mr. Mayor. I'm just calling regarding the new expansion for the Javits Center, and are there any plans for parking garages at the new facility?
Yeah, because there is no parking there now.
When the original thing was built, somebody told me this. You should check, John, whether this is true, that there was a different regulation that would have applied if they put parking in as well, so they deliberately decided not to. I don't know. I wasn't around
that.
I
can't imagine how you build a convention center and not have a parking garage.
They did exactly that.
I know that.
This time, hopefully, there is some provisions for parking. And that whole area, remember, when you bring the number 7 line down, number one, you'll have the alternative of being able to take a subway to get there. You won't have to necessarily go drive. But number two, that whole area is going to, once you have the 7 line there, the private sector will build, there'll be housing, there'll be offices, there'll be parking garages, there'll be stores, and all of the kind of infrastructure you need is going to get there. So I guess, Harold, hold your breath. I hate to say that.
If you start to turn blue, breathe. Harold, thank you. I think we have time for one more.
All right, Don.
Don, you've got the mayor. Make it really fast, please.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Mayor, good morning. I'm calling in regard to the Lynn Stewart sentencing by Judge Kotel earlier this week. You're familiar with that case?
I am.
Okay.
Well, I'm familiar with what I read.
All right. What's the question, Doug?
The question is real quick. To me, that was just a very flagrant violation of sentencing.
All right. Well, let's get the mayor's reaction.
We're running out of time. I did think that it was an outrageously minor penalty for something that really tries to undermine the whole criminal justice system and the defense of this country. I did not agree with the judge, but I'm not the lawyer. I'm not the judge, and that's what we have judges for, and they have more facts than I do and more knowledge than I do and more experience in comparable things. To me, as a layman outside, it looked like the judge erred, he said, because she had done public service and she was sick. That may be, but she was passing notes to somebody that was trying to destroy your children and mine and our country and everything we believe in.
Gotta go. See you next Friday. Looking Thank you very much. Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Stick around.